Well, next week we talk about voodoo, ghosts, and UFOs, but this week, tonight, we're talking about you and your financial life. John Truman Wolf up next with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. John Truman Wolf with us. John, of course, so goes the automobile industry, so goes the country, and we can ill afford to have a downturn there. They get hit awfully fast and hard when something like this happens, don't they?
They do immediately because people don't want to spend and buy new cars. And, you know, we can see what has happened to the automobile industry, maybe not right on the point you were making, but Detroit, unfortunately, is, you know, which used to be a shining star in American enterprise, is a war zone.
It is.
And
it's my hometown. It's a war zone.
It is, huh?
It's horrible.
Yeah. But the point you were making is that a rough economy affects the automobile industry very directly, and that's true. People, you know, will drive the car for another year or two or whatever. And these days, to the credit at least of Japanese manufacturers, and I hate saying that because I'm a chauvinist when it comes to cars, but one of our cars is a Honda, you know, 100,000 miles is just getting warmed up.
And it's getting 30 miles to the gallon, probably, right?
That's right, yeah.
Amazing. So is all this being done intentionally just to bring the United States down to its knees?
Without question. Without question. The purpose of the financial crisis, George, was to take down the U.S., essentially the U.S. dollar, and replace it, because the U.S. dollar was the stable point in international finance, was to hammer it down and to replace that vacuum with a global monetary authority, with a financial dictator. And they did that in 2009 when the Financial Stability Board was created and put into the Bank for International Settlements. The dollar has been beaten up by the yuan ever since. It used to be, you know, all international trade was done by the dollar. This resulted from in 1971 when Richard Nixon closed the gold window, meaning that people couldn't, foreign central banks couldn't cash their dollars in for gold. Nixon in 71 said no because we were printing so much for the Vietnam War, had printed so much. But he made a deal with Saudi Arabia that said, we'll protect your oil fields as long as you insist that all oil is purchased in U.S. dollars.
And you know, that's what got Saddam Hussein in trouble.
That's right. That's right, to try and deviate from that.
Yep.
But now Russia and China are making trade deals in rubles and in yuan. China's making deals with India, with Brazil, with the various of what are called the BRIC countries. Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa, they have their own kind of economic environment, and they're trading among themselves in their own currencies, not in U.S. dollars. And folks may not realize this would have been unheard of a few years ago. Unheard of.
I don't want to sound masochistic, but this is going to be kind of interesting to watch it unfold.
Well, it's interesting, and you have to have enough smarts to kind of see where it's going and see who's going to land, you know, on top. I don't like, from one perspective, don't like recommending the Chinese currency. On the other hand, I do because this currency continues to grow in strength.
But in terms of time, 2 years, 5 years, 8 years?
You know, I don't have that crystal ball, but to my mind, I would say within 2 years.
Would you be in shock if it went past that?
No, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be in shock, but I think 8 years is too long. I mean, this bubble, the debt is growing too fast. The dollar is falling too fast, George. The Bank for International Settlements and the International Monetary Fund are getting more control over different countries. The European Central Bank, you know, people read a year ago about all this financial crisis in Europe in what was called the PIGS, Portugal, Italy,
yeah.
Greece. Okay, good. So then the European Central Bank stepped in and took control of the finances of the European Union. So they now have central control, and all of that so-called crisis disappeared. You don't hear of it anymore. So this is intentional, and in terms of the timing, you know, 2-3 years, that's, you know, that's my best estimate.
Will it happen fast once it starts?
Yes.
So yeah, you really won't have that much time to react then, will you?
No. I mean, you've seen these, you know, when the stock market goes down, like it did in 87 and like it did in 2008, it's a matter of, you know, 24, 48 hours. Boom. The bottom falls out.
How low do you think a $17,000 point Dow could go down?
Man, I don't know. That's a you know, it's a
5,000 points?
Oh, at least. At least.
In two
least,
days?
George. Huh?
That would be people be selling like crazy.
Yeah, the bottom, and you've got people controlling this, George, and manipulating it. Not only did they sell, but these guys behind the scenes, they short sell, meaning they flood the market with a particular stock, and there are no buyers. There aren't enough buyers. So when, you know, short sell means somebody's betting that a stock's going to go down.
Right.
So they borrow stock, and they sell it. And it forces the price down. That's what happened in 2008. If you read between the lines and see what happened, there was a particular rule called, I don't want to get too technical, called an uptick rule, which meant that a stock had to tick up before you short sold it. That rule in August or September was changed. Just quietly it was changed. So the short selling tanked the market. When it tanked, and it will happen again. So I think it'll be fast. I think it'll be dramatic. You know, it would not surprise me to have the market go down 50%. Not at all.
I mean, they've been trying to short, for example, Herbalife, and investors like Carl Icahn are trying to keep it propped up.
Yeah. Yeah, those games do get played, and, you know, as I'm sure you know and probably listeners know, there are professionals that's all they do is short sell.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
With billions of dollars.
Exactly. And the worst of those guys is a guy named George Soros.
We've heard that name before.
This is a bad dude. And the IMF and the World Bank use Soros to go into countries, short sell the country's currency, create a financial crisis. And after having sent Soros in there, they ride in on a white horse, and they say to the president and the premier, gee, is there a problem?
So he probably is doing that now, or he will.
He will. He will be, you know, if he lives. I mean, the guy's not a kid anymore. But if he's around when the string gets pulled here, no question he'll be involved.
All right, let's go to the phones for you. We'll go to Casey in the state of Washington. Hey, Casey, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, I am a longtime listener, big fan.
Thank you,
and
Casey.
I just wanted to say that I came across a website, and it's www.interface.net, E-I-N-T-E-R-F-A-C-E. And it talks about the golden age and that we're in the times of Age of Aquarius. And in it, it gives everything on the economic collapse. And with the economic collapse, people will look for a leader, which Maitreya. And they said that this economic collapse has to happen for him to come. And I think it's going to be really, really soon, within the next few years. And in it, it says it actually gives you May is when it's supposed to start. So I don't know if that's going to be May of next year. But it's really soon. And the UN's going to play a big part in it, creating a sophisticated barter system based on market forces. So I think that's why they're shutting down all the farms and poisoning the foods, because all that's going to be available is through a barter system.
Well, you may be right. And it sounds like the Book of Revelation, John Truman, I don't want to get too biblical here with you, Mr. Wolf, but sounds like you have to have the mark of the beast if you're going to survive.
Well, I think there's no, I think, you know, I think Casey's right, and I don't know that site, but in terms of that this is coming, I think it's unquestionably going to come. What may come out of that, we'll see. We'll take a, you know, I think things are going to get, where my thinking aligns with Casey's is, I think when things get that rough, there will have to be some kind of leader or, you know, somebody that brings the population back up the scale emotionally.
Sure.
and so forth.
As long as he's not the Antichrist.
Let's hope not, George.
Let's go to Steve, truck driving in Arizona. Steven, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you, sir.
How you doing?
Good. Hope you're well, too.
Oh, I am. I wanted to ask your guest, what if I put my money in a secured loan from the bank or some other secured area and then just work off that secured loan with all my deposits going back into it? Can they take my money from that?
Steve, when you say a secured loan, you mean you're going to give your money to the bank and then borrow it back?
Yes.
Like a CD, I guess.
A loan because you're putting your money into it. Like, say you want a $5,000 loan. Well, you put in $5,000, and it helps build your credit.
They'll use it as collateral. Yeah, you can do that. Tell me the benefits, John.
Well, the truth is I don't see a benefit because the deposit, whether it's a CD or otherwise, is you're still an unsecured creditor, Steve, meaning the bank actually owns that money. And if the bank is one of these large banks and it goes under and they put in this bail-in program, depending on, you know, the size of your deposit there, they can take it. They don't have to ask you. They can just take it. So due respect, and I appreciate the, you know, thinking and trying to get creative, but if you've got a deposit in there, it's at risk.
John, if you're going to buy a car and you had the wherewithal, would you finance it or would you write a check for it?
No, I'd write a check.
You really would?
Yes, I would.
God, I'm from this new school. I'd rather use the financing OPM, as they say.
I don't like, I mean, to the degree I can do it, and I can't do it always the way I want to do it, but to the degree I can, I just as soon not use the bank's money.
My dad would have written a check. That's what he liked. He wanted a car, he saved for the car. My mother wanted a new refrigerator, they saved for the refrigerator. No, yeah. Financing there.
Yeah, I understand, and I agree with your folks.
Let's go to Shingletown, California. Hello, Roger. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hey, George. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay.
Good to talk to you. I study Hindi, and I do it every day with a friend in India, in Hyderabad, and we study by reading BBC in Hindi and also Hindi publications. And one of the things that I want to comment on is when he was talking about the fact that there's a lot of inner commerce between other countries now. In India, there's a new phone. It's called the Mi 3. And what it is, it's a iPhone. And they have number 1, number 2, and number 3. They cost $160. I don't know how many rupees that is, but it's probably maybe 20,000 rupees or something. But it's only $160 and it's the same thing. It has a real high-resolution camera and all of that. And that's coming from China. China is now selling to India, and it totally sold off the shelves. It went on sale in India,
God.
All over India, and it went off the shelves within just a few hours. And they've got a backstock, and it won't be coming back to India to be sold until like next month sometime. So this is happening. There's a lot of commerce between these countries. And then the other thing that's huge over there is Modi. Modi is the guy that was just elected by a huge landslide. And what happened is everybody in India just sees him as being the new Gandhi. And Modi is Gujarati, and he was the governor of Gujarat And Gujarat is the most prosperous state in India. They have 24-hour electricity, all kinds of stuff going on, and they're very pro-American. It's pretty amazing what's going on over there. And also India, according to my reading, India is now surpassed Japan in the world economy. It's like third in the world now. And I'll take my answer off the air. I guess I'd just like for him to comment on it. And, George, thanks a lot for letting me on.
Sure thing. Right, India is booming in some areas.
Well, India is booming, and that economy is getting stronger and stronger. He made a couple of points. One, that there's a lot of commerce between China and India, and he's absolutely right. It's getting stronger and stronger. They have made some trade deals. They are doing trade with the rupee and the yuan. And so that relationship in Asia strengthens. You have the two largest, most populous nations on Earth, and both of those economies are getting stronger, while ours is not, unfortunately. In terms of the new leader, great. I don't know him well enough. I haven't studied Indian politics sufficiently to comment, but if he's a pro-American guy, good for him.
So let's talk a little bit about Vladimir Putin. Russia seems to be sitting on a keg of cash these days.
Well, to their credit, and I've written some things about Putin that he probably wouldn't like, but he's a smart dude. And if you look at the Russian economy, I mean, it is very centric on energy, oil, and gas. He's smart enough, George, to stash money away. So they take revenues from their oil sales and they create reserves. We don't do that. By reserves, I mean financial reserves. They have a large cash reserve there. Putin just struck a deal with China for $400 billion of oil and gas sales. So Russia's doing well. The main problem with the Russian economy, you call it a problem, is they are entirely dependent on their energy and gas, their oil and gas. So they need to expand their economy. They're trying to become a tech power. I was over there about a year and a half ago. I spoke at their new tech university, kind of like MIT, called Skolkovo. Magnificent modern university in Moscow. It's gorgeous. Condi Rice spoke there. Schwarzenegger spoke there, and it's gorgeous. And they're trying to build up their the technology aspect of their economy. So they're going up. There are weaknesses in the Russian economy, but they're smart enough to put reserves aside. And if they hit a bounce, they can rely on those reserves.
John, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Dave Schrader filling in for me tomorrow. And thank God all is well with his family. His little boy almost drowned, but he's okay. I'm sure he'll talk about that tomorrow. And we'll be back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment. John Truman Wolf with us. John, is this the plan that we've heard so much about to bring this into a one-world government?
I think without question, George, this is the plan. These are the people doing the planning. These are the people executing the plan, bringing under their control with finances, with debt. I mean, the product of the World Bank, George, is a country in debt. Same with the IMF. The European Central Bank, which, again, is the Fed of Europe, has now got most of the European countries under their thumb by virtue of debt.
And default.
Debt and default. And if the person defaults, then they get... I've read some of these loan agreements, George, between the World Bank and these countries. Stand the hair up on the back of your neck. Gives them control over tax policy, family planning policy, agricultural policy.
Whoa.
This is one world government for sure. Yes.
With a stroke of a pen.
With a stroke of a pen. I mean, they go in. I said, Soros goes in. He short sells the currency. The economy crashes.
Does he have that much money?
He does. He does, because, he's personally worth $30 billion. And then when you short sell, you borrow. So, yes, he does have that kind of power. A crisis ensues. The World Bank or the IMF goes riding in on a white horse, says to the premier, gee, a problem? You want a loan? The premier goes, yes, signs, puts $1 billion in his own Swiss bank account. But now control of all kinds of areas of his country are under the thumb of the World Bank or the IMF.
And what does he care? He's got his bill, right?
One, that's correct. Two, if the person's got enough guts to say no, and I watched this happen several times in Russia in 92 when they did it with Yeltsin, he said no several times. And every time the premier says no, then the crisis gets worse.
Uh-huh.
The currency gets worse to the point that they finally give in and they say okay and they sign. When this happened in Malaysia, the premier said no three or four times. The crises got worse and worse and worse. He was out of office. New premier comes in and he signed. So this is an operation, George. It's not by accident.
Would you call it an act of war?
I would call it an act of war without question.
We should attack these people.
We should. George Soros shouldn't be allowed, I wouldn't say on the planet. He should just be, put in a room somewhere, not let him anywhere near people. Everything he does is destructive, George. He doesn't do anything beneficial to mankind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Got to watch him a little more.
Yeah.
First-time caller, Bobby in Anaheim, California. Hey, Bobby, get us going here.
Hey, I just got home from work. Love hearing what you have to say, John and George.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, you just mentioned about saying no. I'm a blue-collared worker. I've been CNC machining and manual lathe and milling for the last 4 years. And if we did say no, and we still have the actually can manufacture by hand and pull this thing back together, do you think our country, if we did say no, can get back on our bootstraps and pull ourselves up?
Good question. Can we fight this? Can we fight it back as a nation and say, no, we're not going to borrow your money, we don't need it, and we're moving forward?
I think there's no question we could fight it back. Does the country have the backbone to do so today?
Ah.
Could we? Yes. Without question, we could do so. You don't need to be a debtor. You just need to produce, Bobby's talking about. You just have to produce products. And this country, has got centuries of tradition of doing this. Do we have the backbone to do it? Does Congress have the backbone to say no? That's what troubles me. Do we have the potential to do it, as Bobby's suggesting? Unquestionably, we do.
Why don't we use our oil reserves to, create income to pay down debt?
Oh, George, the question is so sane. what's going on in North Dakota is a massive energy boom. And that's exactly what we should do. And to go back to what you said before the break, that's what Putin's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So. And he's doing it brilliantly.
Yes, he is.
Fred is in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Fred, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
George, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Longtime listener.
Thank you.
I have a question for your guest, John Wolf.
Okay.
Knowing what you know, I know a lot of people that have been buying gold and silver for a number of years to preserve their purchasing power as an insurance policy. Knowing what you know, what they would like to do is to eventually pay off their mortgage in devalued dollars and redeeming that gold and silver sometime in the future when it skyrockets in price. My question to you is, do you think it's wise to do that, or would you pay off your mortgage as soon as possible if you're able to do that?
I would pay it off sooner if you're able to do that. However, your friend's plan is a good one. I mean, my opinion, the precious metals boom, the bull market in precious metals is not over. I mean, I've been recommending gold since it was $300 an ounce and silver since it was $5 an ounce.
I think silver would go to $80 an ounce.
Without question.
Yeah.
So I, if you could pay it off, I would pay it off, but that doesn't mean that the plan that your friends are talking about isn't a good one. I think it is a good one.
When you look at how this is unfolding, what would be for us the first telltale sign? Will it be a stock market bust? Will it be defaulted mortgages again? What will we see as the sign? Or will it be all of it at one time?
Well, what has occurred the last times is that the stock market has driven the panic. That's what happened in 2008. You know, when Lehman went under, then all of a sudden everybody scrambled and short sold. It's what happened in 1987. It certainly is what happened in 1929. So I think a tanking of the stock market would be the first major sign. I mean, there are, as we've talked about, there are indicators all over that this bubble continues to grow and at some point will burst. But I think a stock market crash would be the first indicator. The other things that you mentioned, George, would follow quickly thereafter.
Do you think this crash would be so devastating that some people may never recover?
Well, I think it depends on how old the people are. I think it'll take a while to dig out of it. And, you know, hopefully it would be such that all the false economics would get cleaned out and we would return to a system or implement a system where currency was based on products and production. If you based a currency on assets and production, we would be extremely rich, and the international bankers could not create inflation and deflation, which is what they're doing. That is the ultimate solution to this. And it may take a massive crash to bring that about, to restore sanity to the financial markets.
Is there a presidential hopeful out there that could lead us through this mess?
Well, if you want me to stick my toe into politics, I'm a fan of Bobby Jindal's.
Are you really?
Yes, I am. I like him. He's smart.
That came out of nowhere.
Well, you know, he's done a great job in Louisiana. He's a smart guy. He has, stood his ground when the federal government has tried to encroach on his state sovereignty. I think he's a good guy.
Next up, let's go to Donna in Vancouver. Hi, Donna. Go ahead.
Hi, George, and hi, John.
Hi.
Yeah, I was listening to you earlier, George, when you said when you deposit your cash into the bank, it's no longer yours. So I was just wondering, I have a very, very small extra savings account. It's slightly different than my regular checking account. When I opened this, it was not very much, wasn't a high amount of money, just kind of chump change, some people may say. But I was told at the time that I was not allowed to take any money out other than, I believe, $100 at a time. Now, that kind of struck me strange, but I really can't leave the money at home and hide it under mattresses and carpets and things like that because of the tenants in this building are rather questionable, for one thing. But also what I wanted to know is my sister has a bank account. My friends have bank accounts. Everybody in this building has a bank account. The rent is taken out of our bank accounts, so we have to have money in the bank for this, right? So what do we do? Do we just continue on with what we do, deposit our old age security checks and hope that that keeps on that way? Or are we going to worry that John was saying that this is going to be a worldwide nightmare in the near future? What do we do?
Well, I think, number one, and I don't know what banks you've got available, Donna, but if you've got a bank telling you that you can't take out more than $100 at a time, I would change banks. I would, if you've got a credit union near you or one where you can open up such an account online, I would do so. And if your landlord debits your checking account or savings account for the rent, at least you would be in a sane bank. I don't think all deposits are going to get wiped out. It's just important to understand so that you know that, you know, this money now belongs to the bank, and they owe it to you, but it's not your money anymore. So I would go with a financial institution that is not one of the big multi-branch, you know, B of A, Wells, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, I would stay away from those banks because they're the ones that are protected under this new law. So I would, if it were me, I would change banks.
Would that really help?
I think so. I mean, certainly if they've got a banker telling her that she can't take, I mean, it depends on how much is in there, but if she can't take out more than $100 at a time, I would get the hell out of there, excuse the language.
Is that all you said? That's good enough. Let's go to Bob in Oak Park, Illinois. Bob, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, George. Thanks a lot. Yeah, John, with all due respect, John, I think you're fear-mongering. I just made a withdrawal at the bank for $30,000. I did not have any problems whatsoever. I think you would have an insurrection in this country, rioting and just utter chaos if what you're saying is true. I just don't see how the banks could steal your money or take your money from you. I have no problem withdrawing money. I feel sorry for this woman who says she can't withdraw more than $100. That's ridiculous. I mean, where does she bank?
Well, that was my point as well. Bob. I mean, she should move banks. I'm not saying that they're doing this now, Bob. What I am saying is that the FDIC has made it very clear that that's what their plan is. Would there be an insurrection? You're probably right. That could definitely follow. I don't like talking about this stuff. I've said it several times, but this is when you actually, you know, look at what the Bank for International Settlements is doing, when you look at the massive, massive amount of government debt, if you look at $1.4 quadrillion of derivatives, with hundreds of trillions of those just being paper bets, these are bubbles, Bob, and sooner or later they will break, and my opinion is they will affect the banks. So I'm not saying that people can't withdraw money now. I can get money out of my bank now, but there may well come a time where that's not the case.
What's amazing, so many money managers are talking about the next big collapse, and they say it sooner than later. That, to me, John, is scary.
Yeah, and I don't. The truth of the matter is, I don't know if they have the same thing in mind as I do when they're talking about a collapse. I mean, maybe they think it's going to be in 1987, and that, you know, the market will dip down 500 points
for a few days and bounce back. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like that.
Let's go to Timothy in Seattle, Washington. Now, hey Tim, go ahead.
Yes, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
You are king of the mountain, George. King of late night. Hats off to you. I don't know how you were able to politically broker it out, but more information comes out of your coast-to-coast international show than anything else, and I'm impressed. I wanted to ask your guest about buy-ins, but before I do that, I wanted to mention, to let everybody know, that for the last 4 or 5 years, they've had a helicopter that has had a sonic radar imaging system on it, in which the Israelis know exactly where all of the tunnels are that come from Gaza to Israel. So the bombing is completely, it's completely, I don't know why they're bombing. They know where the tunnels are. Your guest, John, are you there?
I'm here, definitely, Timothy.
Okay, the bail-ins, this is what I'm concerned about, what they did in Cyprus. They keep talking about they're going to trade off 20 or 40% of the money that you have in your 401k, your pension fund, whatever, and they're going to give you bank stock in return. So the bail-ins really have got me concerned. Is that the glide path forward? They've been trying to get all the nations of the earth on board, and the only holdouts now are Japan, China, Russia, Argentina, and a couple of others. But they look like they want to do a worldwide bail-in. So go ahead. That's really what I wanted to mention.
Sure thing. Okay.
Thanks, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You got a couple minutes left. Go ahead.
Timothy, the answer is yes, that is the glide path. And I've written, if we just got a couple minutes, I'm not going to get into it in great depth, but George has mentioned, and I'll take the liberty of doing so, If you go to the hardtruthmag.com, it's a magazine that we recently started publishing, and I've got an article in there on this subject. This is the plan. This bail-in thing, it'll take some massaging, but I'll tell you what will happen is it will take a crisis, and then Congress will agree. And while the prior guest said, well, you know, there'll be riots or whatever, he may be right. But I think the international bankers of the world, from the Bank of International Settlements through the IMF down through the Fed, this is their plan. It's in writing if you research it, and this is what the intention is. You know, when this gets implemented, I don't know, but I think it will be sooner rather than later.
I'm afraid you may be right, my friend. Let's give out your website, if you would, John.
TheHardTruthMag.com. TheHardTruthMag.com.
Simple enough. John, thank you for being on the program. Let us see what happens over the next couple of years. You know, it could be.
George, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right. John Truman Wolf, the name of his book, Crisis by Design. So look, we had two separate guests tonight. I didn't want to overwhelm you, but both of them are saying similar things, and there are a lot of investment money managers out there saying the same thing, that the next one could be the big one. Prepare yourself. Take care of yourself and your family. You've heard it. You know, it's not like we're, you know, the British are coming. We're not. It's not one of those panic things yet, but just get ready, because you just never know when you need to have a little reserve somewhere. And download, by the way, our free apps, if you would. You can grab them at coasttocoastam.com in the store. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.